3. HMS Dancer 56 off Trove Island, Gulf of Dolar. Green, Sir Gwilym Manthir thought, was a remarkably nice color. It was particularly nice after spending 2 entire 5 days on rocky, barren, sun-blasted, thoroughly miserable Claw Island. The green which prompted that particular consideration was found in the trees and grass covering Trove Island off the Dolar Bank. Technically, the island's inhabitants, of which thankfully there were not many, were subjects of King Ronald of Dolar. Trove Island, however, did not belong to King Ronald. Emperor Waisu VI's ministers had made that point abundantly clear. Actually, the present emperor's father, who had also happened to be named Waisu, had made it clear to King Ronald's father, who had also happened to be named Ronald, and the current Waisu had simply expressed his intention to keep things that way. The current Ronald didn't much care for it, since he had pretensions of extending Dolaran sway throughout the entire Gulf of Dolar. Despite the money he'd poured into the fleet, which had been destroyed at Rock Point and Crag Reach, however, he'd never had the military strength to survive a serious disagreement with Harchong. It was, admittedly, unlikely Harchong would put itself to the trouble and expense of squashing Dolaran posturing, but unlikely wasn't the same thing as never going to happen, and provoking Harchong to military action was the sort of mistake one normally only got to make once. On the other hand, he'd managed to get Harchong to agree that the Dolar Bank and the islands around Whale Island Shoal farther west would be unclaimed by either realm. Waisu, or rather his ministers, it was entirely possible Waisu hadn't made a single policy-making decision during his entire 12 years on the throne, hadn't cared enough to argue. All they'd wanted was to make certain Dolar didn't fortify any of the island's harbors and that Ronald's expansionist ambitions were held more or less in check. Well, they'd also wanted to be sure the lucrative smuggling traffic, which passed through the islands and deposited sizable sums in their purses, continued unabated, of course. Manthir had been pleasantly surprised to discover that the state of affairs continued unchanged. He'd expected the Dolarans and Harchongese to have patched up some sort of understanding, now that the group of four had more or less married them at sword point. From a Carizian perspective, leaving nice, convenient island bases less than 500 miles off the coast of Dolar, and even closer than that to Harchong's province of Erech, wide open to enemy occupation, was an act of lunacy. It would no more have occurred to Emperor Caleb to do such a thing than it would have occurred to him to go swimming with krakens with a fresh stake tied to his back. If anything had been wanting to convince Manthir that neither Dolarans nor Harchongese had even the ghost of a whisper of a clue where the realities of naval strategy were concerned, finding these islands completely unfortified and unprotected provided it. He watched boatloads of Marines pulling for the shore and shook his head. Disgusted as he was also grateful. Kelm Bay, on Trove's northeastern coast, was too small for his entire force. It measured barely 8 miles in width, and it was totally open to any northerly wind, but the water was relatively deep, the bottom was good holding ground, and it was practically impervious to wind from any other direction, thanks to the island's rocky height. As a temporary anchorage for minor repairs or resupply, it would do very well indeed. And it was the island's only really good deep-water anchorage. So, once Major Brainock Windale's battalion of Colonel Vasag Pariah's 14th Marine Regiment was ensconced ashore, taking the island back again would present a major military challenge. Especially with the battery of 30-pounders, which had been thoughtfully brought along, specifically to make King Ranald's and Emperor Waisu's lives difficult. He was just as happy Chelmsport, the island's largest town, had less than 200 inhabitants. It decreased the probability of anyone's doing anything foolish, although he couldn't quite rule the possibility out, especially with the religious component to consider. Still, it seemed unlikely, and Chelmsport had reliable sources of water, which was always the greatest potential weakness of a warship. Assuming the locals were inclined to be reasonable, it might also be another source of fresh food, which wasn't anything to sneeze at. Brigadier Teotain's 5th Brigade and the 2nd Battalion of Colonel Pariah's Independent Regiment had laboriously broken ground for crops back at Claw Island, and the water supply there was nowhere near as limited as Captain LaFat had suggested. It had taken quite a bit of ingenuity to rig an aqueduct and a wind-powered pump to feed it to provide adequate irrigation. But one thing the island had in plenty was seabird and wyvern guano. That provided lots of fertilizer, and at least half Teotain's Marines had been farm boys before they enlisted. Still, it would be an arduous task to grow enough food for the expedition. He expected to get at least some supplies from the prizes he was shortly going to be taking, but having an additional source would be more than simply convenient. "And if the Trove Islanders will sell us food, then we can probably convince the other islands in the area to do the same thing, if we're willing to be discreet about it. Another thing the naval geniuses who left them wide open this way obviously didn't consider." He shook his head wonderingly one more time over his opponent's stupidity, then turned away from the rail. It was time he and his captains got down to the business of making the other side's lives as miserable as possible. "And it serves the idiots right, too," he thought.